same chapter, same musaf, v'chein tein pachtecha, v'chein tein kavoid, v'chein tzaddikim, v'sim lechata Hashem levadecha. Those are the same, right? Those are the special yomim noiroim tefillos. And I just really want to get a little bit of a glimpse as to what the depth of it is. Maybe you read up on it, right? Did you looked a little bit? Learned a little bit. What are these tefillos? They're unique for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Now what's important is Yom Kippur. I don't say it any other time, these tefillos. So the first curiosity, which the Mefarshim speak about, is this language, uvechein. Uvechein tein pachtecha, uvechein tein kavod, uvechein tzadikim. There's three uvecheins, which is strange because the first uvechein, usually don't start a sentence with the word and. You get in trouble if you do that in school, right? And. So uvechein, this is the beginning. Uvechein tein pachtecha, and therefore tein pachtecha, and therefore tein kavod, and therefore the tzaddikim yirovi yismol. Therefore what? What therefore implies that being, now that I said point A, therefore continue on in this derech, right? Therefore, and so the whole therefore is a little bit hard to understand, but what's uvechein? And therefore, vav is always above achibor, right? Vav is connecting to something else. What are we connecting to? So let's speak about it esoterically and then try to bring it down to earth just before we even begin. Always good to start with some gematrias. I used to always knock gematrias. I thought they were like chassidus shemaisim until I understood that this was like the real depth. There's a little bit of a revelation of real depth in a gematria. But the word bechein, beis chaf nun, who's quick on their feet? What?
72.
Quick on your feet. And what's 72?
Four times chai.
What you go by?
You get to shul a lot, I see. Four times chai. It's like an auction thing, right? Five times chai. I used to think when I was raising money, whenever I would give you $18, I used to think, just give me Mavis. So, 446 is so much better than 18, right? Give me Mavis, yeah. Okay, four times chai, good. So the name of Hashem, the explicit name of Hashem, Shem HaMefoirish, the shame that the Kohen Gadol said when he went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur, the Shem HaMefoirish is called, always referred to as the Shem Ayin Beis. The Shem Ayin Beis. Most of those letters you'll find in the Ana B'choach, where you see Ana B'choach, Adulis Himincha Tachir Tzrura, so you have right next to it, you say, so that's also the Shem HaMefarish. That's the Shem Ayin Beis. But not in that order necessarily. It's a scramble game. You have to know how to turn it around until you get to the Shem HaMefarish, which I certainly don't know how to do, and if I knew, I wouldn't tell you. But it's very, very interesting that when we talk about like the miracles that people can do when they have the Shem HaMefarish, when they know the Shem HaMefarish, all the miracles they can do. Let's talk about the Shem Ayin Beis. There's a medrash at the end of Eicha, which refers to, which is a very, very strange thing, but it refers to Yashka, that when he went into the Beis HaMikdash, he got a hold of the Shem Ayin Beis, and he actually implanted it under his skin, according to the Medrash, and was able to do miracles. It's interesting. Most people say he was just a fraud, but I'm saying that this is a Medrash, which seems to be referring to, it says that he had this kaach of miracles because he had abused the Shem HaMefarish. But anyways, that's called the Shem HaMefarish. So Bechein is the Shem HaMefarish. Again, what about it? I don't know, but it's a Shem HaMefarish. Interesting. Here it says Uvechein. So if you add 60 or 72, what do you get to? 78. So what's 78?
Three times
Yud Kei Vav Kei. Yud Kei Vav Kei is 26, which is the Shem Hashem. And so that's Yud Kei Vav Kei. And three times Yudke Vavke is 78, so that's Uvechein. So why three times Yudke Vavke? So the answer is, three times Yudke Vavke, three, and then you have three Uvecheins, give you nine. And it was nine times that the Kohen Gadol said, and we talk about down, nine times on Yom Kippur that the Kohen Gadol says, the Shem HaMefarish Yotze Mipi Kohen Gadol Be'emo V'yira, as we say in Tefillah. Right, that's the nine times that the Kohen went in. So this Uvechein, this, by the way, everything I'm telling you says in the Vilna Gaon. Nothing is my chiddush here. So we have two things here. Bechein on itself is the Shem HaMefarish of 72. And Uvechein is three times Yud Kei Vav Kei, three times the Shem Havaya, as it's referred to, which is three, and there's three Uvechein, which is nine, which is the nine times that the Kohen Gadol goes in. And then just the other remez is that if you take, how it works when you write something bimloyei, bimibli? Do you know that? A secret of gematria is, let's say you got a yud, hey, right? Let's say you actually write it out. Instead of just writing yud, hey, you write yud, hey, right? So you end up, if you count up, yud, vav, dalet, hey, aleph, you end up with 72, which is the Shem HaMefarish. So it's interesting that you can't distinguish between, I'm just not writing out because I don't feel like writing the Shem HaMefarish right now. But, I always wonder what people think when they look at this whiteboard after I leave, I just want to bring out that you can't, the Rambam says it's a Mar Nebuchim, you can't make a distinction between Yudke, Vavke, and the Shem Ayin Beis. Because what's really happening, the Rambam says this, is that Yud Hei Vav Hei, the Shem HaMefarish, is the Shem Havaya rather, the Rambam says, Zu Shem HaMefarish V'chol Dabar. That is the Shem HaMefarish. So everybody asks in the Rambam, didn't he know, okay, it wasn't a Makubal, but didn't he know that the Shem HaMefarish is the Shem Ayin Beis? Everyone knows that it's 72. So the Arizal explains that what the Rambam meant is he didn't mean that Yud Kei Vav Kei is the Shem HaMefarish. That stands for the Shem HaMefarish, because if you write it out this way, it comes out to exactly 72. And 72 is abbreviated by the Shem Havaya, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei. So the question is this. So now that we're all major Mekubalim, and we all know exactly what Uvechein means, so now let me throw the question at you. We have the Shem HaMefarish in every aspect of tefillah, meaning Uvechein Tein Pachta, Uvechein Tein Kavod. Before we get into the tefillah itself, Uvechein Tzadikim Yiru V'Yismachu. Why? Uvechein, and therefore, forget about therefore, it doesn't even mean therefore anymore. And with the Shem HaMefarish of Hashem, Tein Pachtacha Hashem Elokeinu, Tein Kavod Hashem Lamecha. Tzadikim Yiru V'Yismachu. What does it mean? What are we doing? What does it mean? When we refer to the Shem HaMefarish, what does it mean that we should precede every single tefillah with that Shem HaMefarish? Tell me a story. Somebody give me an idea. Because I've been struggling with this for a while now. What could it possibly mean? Think of something. Let me broaden the question. We say Baruch Hashem. Hashem, that's the most common term for God, right? Hashem. Talk about the name. It's a funny way to call it, right? Call it the Creator, the Bar Olam, the Kutcha Brichu, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. There's so many different ways to call God. What's Hashem? The name. A person is instructed to make a Kiddush Hashem, and never to make a Chilul Hashem. Why the shame? What does the shame have to do with anything? What we should be really referring to is, you should make a kiddush Ribono Shel Olam. Don't make a chilul Ribono Shel Olam. The Rambam has a whole chapter about when you have to even give up your life. For three averus, you have to give up your life. Where is it? It's in Hilchos Kiddush Hashem. All over the place, right? Shimcha Liyolam, right? We say it in davening also. Shimcha Liyolam. Ata Kadosh v'Shimcha Kadosh. What do we want from the name of Hashem? Don't stare at me. Tell me. What do we want from the shame of Hashem? What? What is it? What's it for? Why is it important? The shame of Hashem. The name of Hashem.
Doesn't the name represent So it's like the closest we can almost see to God's essence is through his name. We can't actually see.
So maybe the opposite. Maybe it does not say his essence.
It says like a toned down level of this.
Oh. So let's good. So let's put it this way. When we talk about the Shemos of Hashem, extremely important, we're talking about the Midos of Hashem. And this we have to look for every time we open up a Chumash, every time we say Tillim, every time we daven. That when we talk about the Shem Hashem, we're talking about the Midah of Hashem. What does it mean? It means whenever you see Elohim, right? Hashem hu Elohim. Or I think I said this a couple of weeks ago. Shema Yisrael. Simple. Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? Hashem meaning Yudke Vavke. Shem Havaya, the 26 that we're talking about. Always, 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 whenever you find it, it talks about the fact that Hashem has mercy. It's a merciful God. Whenever we talk about Elohim or Elokeinu, we're talking about a tough, stringent God. So Shema Yisrael, when we say Shema, we say Hashem. On the one hand, you're very merciful. Elokeinu, sometimes you get a little bit rough on us. And it's hard for me to deal with the fact that sometimes you're nice and sometimes you're not so nice, right? Sometimes you're making me rich, sometimes you're making me poor, sometimes you're making me healthy, sometimes you're making me sick. It's hard for me to reconcile the two things. But that is the job of a Jew, Hashem Echad. That's called Yichud Hashem. I'm willing and able to accept the fact that whatever Hashem does, whether it seems to me to be nice, whether it seems to be a little bit tough on us, it's all one thing. That's why Avraham Avinu, like when you think about it, Avraham Avinu, we always say, discovered God. When he discovered Hashem, he knew one thing about Hashem. He knew that he's kind. Makes the sun rise, he makes the world beautiful, and Titein Emes Liakov, Chesed L'Avram, he saw Chesed of Hashem, and in his wanting to emulate Hashem, he did Chesed, opened up his tents to all four sides, let's be godly, it's all about Chesed, Chesed, Chesed. With Yitzchak, had a knife on his throat, in the name of God. So he saw, to him, it wasn't only a God of love, there's like a God of din also, right? There's some din over there. Yitzchak always spoke about Elikim, Gvura, Gvuras Yitzchak, Pachad Yitzchak, Pachad Yitzchak, right? Yitzchak had a different, it's had, Avraham Avinu knew Hashem as Chesed, Yudke Vavke, and Yitzchak knew him as Din. It wasn't until Yaakov came, Tiferes, Yaakov, that he was able to say Hashem Echad. Look, sometimes it's like Avraham, and sometimes it's like Yitzchak. It's Yaakov. That's Hakel HaGadol. HaGadol means Chesed, always Gadol. Gadol Chastecha. HaGibor VeHanora. And that's Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Okay, Avraham, okay, Yitzchak, okay, Yaakov. Hakel HaGadol, HaGibor VeHanora. So this is very, very important. Yeah.
Is there a reason that we're allowed to pronounce the name Elokeinu and davening, we're not allowed to pronounce the name Hashem?
For sure. Because the Midas HaRachamim is, first of all, because the Midas HaRachamim, Yudkei Vavkei, is the Shem HaMeforash of Hashem, right? So we say, Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey, comes out to be already 72. We're talking about serious things. Never say it. Not like you read it, do you say it? You're right. Elohim is Midas HaDin. Make it deeper. One more gematria. Ha Elohim. Elohim, Midas HaDin. Is the same gematria, same numbers as Hateva. How many is that?
187. 187.
Hateva. Has 5.
57.
Tess is 9. Get those cell phones out. Vase is 2.
81.
Let's do it easier. Elohim.
86.
Right. Hateva is 86. So, what does it mean? What we just said, Elohim is Midas HaDin. What's it going to do with Teva? So, let me tell you something. This should be such a chiddush. It was such a chiddush to me, so I want it to be a chiddush to you too. The world left to its own devices. In other words, nature, as we call it, nature, is Midas HaDin. Din is not a bad thing. Din is a good thing. Din means what does din mean? Would you want to live in a world without any din? I mean, that would be crazy, right? I mean, it would be chaotic. Like this, there's din. There's rules. There's laws of nature. Like you can pretty much count on the fact the sun's going to come up tomorrow and it's going to set at night, and that people will act in a certain way, and trees are going to grow up, not down, and water's going to flow this way, not flow that way. I mean, if there wouldn't be any din, those are dinim. Those are the laws of nature, and that's the same dinim. That's the same din. There's nothing different between that din and the din which was a knife on Yitzhak. In other words, din means this is the way it's supposed to be. God created a system. The system is din. If you fail within the system, so you fail within the system. You know, look at Midas HaDin means that, you know, your mark isn't right. Stay back a grade. Your mark isn't right. I can't graduate you. So the din is nothing but nature. Nature is nothing but din. Now, you can go to the professor and you can say, but have mercy, right? I mean, I spent a year, I worked my head off, and my mother's going to kill me. I mean, you can say, have mercy. Okay, so he can come from a different way and say, let's do something which is not din, let's do something which is rachmi. Uh-huh. But din unto itself is not a bad thing, it's a good thing. That is the structure. Hateva, Elokim, is hateva. That's the nature. Is there anything more beautiful in the world than taking a walk through nature? Watching the river go exactly the way it's supposed to go? And watch the trees go in the wind exactly the way they're supposed to and go in the spring and watch how they blossom and they bud and listening to the birds chirp? That's nature. That is the system of the world. It's beautiful. It would be very disconcerting if you would take a nature walk and nature wouldn't happen. The water would start going the other way. It would be interesting. Like you'd watch it and want to take a picture, but it would be weird. If everything would start happening unnatural. Din is hateva, that's a good thing. But the problem is miyamid lufanecha badin. You know, if we're and that's what we keep on saying on Yom Kippur. It's din, and that's what Hashem is doing on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, din. But miyamid lufanecha badin, but will I make the grade? Can I make the grade? So we ask for Hashem to add in a little bit of Rachman. Here's the key example. Breishis bara Elokim es Hashemayim ves Haaretz. Hashem created the world. Doesn't say anything but Elokim. Hateva. Created the world. Midas Hadin. So the Gemara says, Rotza HaKadosh Baruch Hu Midas Hadin. Hashem wants it all to be din. Let me make a system, and that's the system, and everybody work within that system. Rosh Ein Olam Miskayim. However, the Gemara says he saw that the world cannot possibly stand. The world can't exist. Nobody, that we have Yetzirahs, people have their human frailties. And sometimes you've got to go against the law. So, Shitevimai Midas HaRachamim. So he added into the stew a little bit of, he peppered it with some Rachamim. So we like Rachamim. Everybody likes mercy. But the fact of the matter is, for the world to exist, it has to be din. So that's a very, Shema Yisrael, Hashem, which is Midas HaRachamim, Elokeinu, which is Midas HaDin, Hashem Echad. That's what it's all about. So when we talk about the names of Hashem, when we talk about, let me just figure out how to shut the ringer up. So we're getting closer to a truth over here. When we talk about the names of Hashem, we're not just saying, this is your name, you know, Joe, John, El, Avram, Yitzhak, Moshe. We're talking about the midos of Hashem. When we talk about the shame hamiforesh, we're talking about the ultimate shame of Hashem. So it's just simple logic that would dictate that the ultimate shame of Hashem is a shame which has in it all of the midos. Because the only thing that divides Rachamim and Din, to take the two basic ideas, without getting into the whole Kabbalistic tree, the only thing that divides Rachamim and Din is our brains. We can't, so we have to tell ourselves Hashem Echad. But in Hashem's world, there's only one Hashem. It doesn't Rachamim and Din becomes all one. So when you talk about the total, the real holiness of everything, we're talking about the Shem HaMeforesh, you're talking about a 72-letter name, which has every single mita in it, and that's why miracles and nature and everything is all combined together, because it's the Shem HaMeforesh. So when we're davening in front of Hashem on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we we say uvechein. When the Kohen Gadol, this is not just like Mekubalim did this, because when the Kohen Gadol went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, this is what he said. Right, which came out of his mouth, bimfarish, shem Hashem bimfarish, that's what we say in the davening. Hayukarim, mishtachim, right, menoifim alpneim. That's the over and over again. Kachaya omer, achas ba'achas. You get to the tefillahs, that's what it's all revolving. The whole tefillah of Yom Kippur, the whole avoda of Musaf of Yom Kippur, it's all revolving around the Shem Hashem. What is the Shem Hashem? So I'm going to get a little closer to the truth that what we're saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on a day like Yom Kippur, where we're fasting and we're really sitting in shul and we're really devoting at least like one day, like one full day to Hashem. It's like really, it's really something. So that should break through all of the different. All of the different barriers and klipos that exist, and we should just talk about the fact that Hashem can do anything. He can do anything he wants, and it's with that kavona that we're coming in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uvechein, and that's why we say it three times. Uvechein, uvechein, uvechein. Okay, with me so far? Everybody good? Mm-hmm. Now, what are we asking for? So what's interesting is that in these three tefillos, uvechein, 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 which make up the ikar tefillah, if you will, of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and the common denominator between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. So first of all, there's nothing. What's interesting is that there's no personal requests here. You can't point to one thing which is like good for me. The requests either for the world at large or for the Jewish people, that's about as narrow as it gets. Talk about the world. So here's an interesting thing, that when you talk about what's good for me, what's bad for me, so we can start talking to Hashem about midas hadin, midas harachamim, have a little bit more rachamim, a little bit less din. We like nature, but we don't want it to be completely. We like hateva, but not completely hateva. When we talk about the world, we're talking about something much bigger. And here, like here we said, our Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we're davening for the world. Listen, we should all do this. Comes Thursday, Wednesday night, Thursday, Yom Kippur. The first thing is, very first thing, is davening for the world. The world needs a Yeshua. Like this, we don't need anything too deep over here. The whole world is besakana right now. There's nuclear missiles based in every direction, and nothing's going to happen, no question. But the fact of the matter is, the world is in sakana. It's in sakana of hunger, sakana of tsunamis. I mean, crazy things are going on in the world. Crazy things are going on in the world. We're daven for the world, the world at large. You think, like, if I live on some quiet farm in Oklahoma, like, I don't have to be part of this whole thing, right? It doesn't work. you live in New Orleans, boom, flooded over. So we've got to daven for the world. And we need to daven, it sounds so frum, but it's what it says here. We need to daven that the world should. Like, here's something that probably we don't think about enough, and it's like really like such a basic thing. Like, what we really should want is that the whole world recognizes and believes in the true Hashem. And I'm not saying like everybody's got to walk around like real, religious and be davening all the time. That would be like a funny kind of world. But generally speaking, I mean, if you think about it, I'm not talking about, corrupt and perverted views of religion and God. The world likes to say that more people have died in the name of God than in any other, any war or any natural catastrophe. Okay, in the name of what God? what God? But if we're talking about, Hashem, if people would have, so I'm just, simple thing, if people would have Yirah Shamayim, it would be a whole different story out there. There would be peace between nations. If everybody believed in the same God, there would be peace. There would be no wars. This is what we want when we want Mashiach. We want Mashiach to It could be even that even after Mashiach comes, there's room for different beliefs, and you know, it's not like everybody necessarily is going to, you know, become a Litvak, you know. But what it means is that when Mashiach comes, that Nasu Shchem Echad, everyone will become one, you know, one basic belief. There will be one simple truth in this world, and that is that God created the world, and we have to do His Ratzon, and He's a God of peace. And to a great extent, that's the tefillah of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Nothing more complicated than that. It's like a very simple tefillah. And let's just go through a drop of it, pieces here and there. I'm sure you know it by heart already, but I'll just uvachein. Remember that Shem Hashem. The first thing we say is Tein Pachtecha Hashem Alekeinu Al Kol Maasecha. Put a pachat on every one of your creations. Ve'maschal Al Kol Maasheberus Barasa. Now, this is extremely interesting and extremely symmetrical. Because look what we're asking. It sounds redundant, right? Let's get the words. What does it mean?
If your fear
is
in all your creations.
On everything you created. Ve'emoscha, and your fear. Al kol ma'ashabarasa. Everything you created. So we just have the same thing twice. Right? Tein pachtecha Hashem Elokeinu al kol ma'asecha. Put your fear on everything you created, and not only that, they must call kol ma'asecha. Put your fear on everything that you created.
Different level.
Want to elaborate, or?
Rabbi David explained that the pasuk in Parshat Nitzav, where it talks about how first you'll come to worship gods of wood, and then the gods of stone, and then silver, and then gold. How each one, one step higher for the beginning is just like, oh, it's just wood to you, it's no big deal, and it becomes stone. And the same thing here, each level of pachad ema is more of a, like, pachad is something that you feel, like you give an example that like you're riding on a horse and the horse is taking you, and you don't and like you're just very, very scared because you're totally out of your control. And ema is like an even worse feeling, like to the point where he said, I forget who the guy that was that said, but like a little kid, they make in their pants because they just get, they don't.
Is that what he said?
Okay,
good. Good, beautiful. So let me. Very good. I'm not sure exactly what he, you know. Let me tell you what the Gross says. The Gross says, very good. You'll tell me if it's similar or not. He says like this: part of similar is part of not. Pachad. There's two working feelings here. You have a pachad and an ema. So the Gaon says like this: pachad hu ala kroivim ve'ema ala rechoikim. A little bit different. The Gaon says pachad hu ala kroivim ve'ema hu al harechoikim. It means there's two ways to be afraid. I'm afraid. Guy's holding a gun to my head, right? It's pachad. I'm afraid he's going to shoot me. I'm going to blow my brains out. Right? That's going to be that. You know, in a second it's going to be over. Pachad. That's called pachad. You know, boom. Somebody comes and scares you. It's a pachad. Right there. You're right there. Ema is more of a, he says, ala rechoikim, it's more of a conceptual fear. You know, the Iranians may nuke Israel. Okay. I mean, is anybody shaken? I mean, it's a big, you know, it's in a way, it's like a little bit worse than the gun to the head, you know, like, it's a big sign in Manhattan. You ever see the, right near Times Square, it's, you know, one nuclear bomb can ruin your whole day. It's like a big gigantic billboard. Okay, but you know what, it's rachok, you know, it means rachok, first of all, it's geographically distant, which doesn't really mean anything, you know. So it takes 14 seconds longer for the thing to get. I mean, but it's what I think. Rachok means not just geographically. Rachok means conceptually, it's further. First of all, like, they didn't finish making the nuclear bombs yet. Second of all, probably Israel's going to attack them. And third of all, even if Israel doesn't attack them, probably America is not going to do it. And then we're probably going to get these, you know, shields, these big weapons, you know, weapon shields, and possibly, as Rav Kaduri once said, that it's a good thing, let them, you know, Rav Kaduri, the big Makubal, he said it's a good thing, like if they shoot nuclear missiles over Israel, then he predicted that the wind will come exactly at that moment and blow it over to the Palestinians. Okay. In other words, there's an imminent threat, but you know, we could say some things that can make us feel good about it. Whereas, if the guy's got the gun in my head, it's kind of tough to smile. Like maybe if you're a real tzaddik, you know, you could say, look, what's this world anyway? You know, I have another world. You know, there's Olam Haba. But you know, it's close. So one is a pachad, and one is an ema. So says the guy, pachad hu al hakroivim, the ema al harechoikim. Okay. So what about it? Chein tein pachtecha Hashem alikecha keinu al kol maasecha. Okay, two other working words here. Pachad goes al kol maasecha. Ema goes al kol mashebarasa. So now we have, first of all, we have pachad and ema. You want me to write it down for you? You have it. Right? You have pachad and ema. But then you also have who on what, right? You have pachtecha al kol maasecha, emoscha al kol mashebarasa. You have the maisei Hashem, and you have the bria of Hashem. So what's the difference between the maisa Hashem and the bria of Hashem? Pachad goes on the maisa. Ema goes on the bruin. So again, when we translated, we just said, put your fear on all those that you created, and put your fear on all those that created. So okay, no, we're not going to do that. Put your very close pachad on all those that you created, and put your ema, more further distant fear, also on all those that created. No. Because as a guy, there's a big difference between masecha and komasha barasa. Al komasecha ba komasha barasa. And it goes like this, that everything that Hashem created is a bria. Everything Hashem created is a bria. When that every bria that Hashem created, the way it works, has to grow to maturity. Nothing's created complete. If there's a tree, the tree has to grow, the tree has to bear fruit, has to plant other trees. If there's a person, the person has to grow, the person needs a bris milah, the person has to go through a bar mitzvah, the person has to be mekabel all mitzvahs, the person has to grow in maturity, grow in intelligence, grow in your shemayim. Animals, an animal has to grow from being a calf to being a cow, that it can give birth, and it can have. In order for something to reach its tachlis, it has to grow. So when it's, if something stays in its original mode of creation, that's called, in Lashon HaKodesh, says the Goyin, that's called a bria. When something reaches its development, it unfickles, right, into maturity. Comes into its own. It becomes what it was created to become. Not created to stay there like a little kid. Created to become something. So that becoming something is called a maisa. Do you remember that a couple of weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whatever, I showed you how the Kabbalistic worlds go: Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, Asiya. The lowest level, but which is really the highest level, is the world of Asiya. In other words, Atzilus, what? Well, that's how you look at it, but in other words, Atzilus, things are not yet created. It's just like a thought. Remember I explained to you? It's just like a thought. And then there's Bria, where it takes more form. Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira. Asiya is where it becomes what it's supposed to be. So in our lives, we can go through such an idea. You know, a person, before they're even born, the Gemara says they know all the Torah. So, what good is it? You don't get any schar for that. It's the world of Atzilus. Ein lecha yamim togim. God told me that the greatest days in a person's life is before they're born. We don't remember that. It's Atzilus. We don't remember. But then you go through stages. Now you get it back. Bria, Yetzira. It's an interesting thing, by the way. It's like if we forget, you know, the Gemara says a malach comes, bangs us in the mouth, and we forget all the Torah we learned in our mother's womb. So what are we learning for? What was the point of the exercise? So the answer is that it's in there somewhere. You know, it's in there somewhere. Not just as a deja vu, but in reality it's in there someplace. So in other words, when you come to a piece of Torah's emes, if that was the Torah that was taught to your neshama before you were born, it rings true. Touches a nerve. You feel, wow, that's emes, I'm a kabbal that. And if it's not your Torah, it's not your Torah, so then it just flies right over your head. I always think to myself that the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo, lived in Tzfas. He was next door neighbors with the Arizal. You go to Tzfas today, you see his house. Right? And the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, kept up going to the Arizal Shurim. He was intrigued with the idea of what the Arizal was teaching Kabbalah. But every time he came to the Shir, oh, this is written in Sfarim, he fell asleep. He fell sound asleep. And he woke up, I apologize, Rebbe. Like I'm sleeping, I don't know why I'm sleeping so much, you know. But, you know, I don't sleep through anything else. I just sleep through your shiur. The Arizal, can you imagine just sitting sleeping? The Arizal said, this is especially not for your neshama. You have a halachic neshama.
Wasn't
Rabbi Yosef
Karo also in the Kabbalah?
Different Kabbalah. It wasn't the Kabbalah of the Ari. Different Kabbalah. It's not for your neshama. Not everybody's neshama is the same. Yeah.
So you know, like, sometimes psychiatrists can, like, use hypnosis to, like, retrieve suppressed memories. So,
yeah.
Has anyone done that with, like, Torah?
I don't know if psychiatrists can do this, but, I don't think there's any question. You see, memory, the word memory, implies that we're talking about the brain. The brain wasn't necessarily developed in the mother's womb. We're not talking about the brain. You know, baby born, you know, ga, ga, goo, you know, like, not much brain there. But the pshat is that there are certain things which are, there's Torah which is talk to my neshama. So it's a spiritual memory. So if it's a spiritual memory, but this is an important thing, by the way, that we always ask when we daven. We always ask the same chalkenu b'sarusecha. Give me my chelik in Torah. It's not going to work to get somebody else's chelik in Torah. It's just not going to work. It's not going to penetrate. It could be interesting. You read a chapter about it, read a book about it, but it's not. I have my Torah. You know, every one of us has to. You know, at the end, you have to be mechadish. In other words, you have to be able to make your contribution to Torah. You can't jump the gun and do it before you know what you're talking about. But at the end of the day, the goal is to contribute to the world your Torah. It's just a very important thing. Every single person has a different chelik in Torah. It means to say that, you know, from, let's start with Moshe Rabbeinu. Anyways, from Moshe Rabbeinu until the time Mashiach comes, there's a certain amount of Torah that has to be revealed into this world. And every single person, every single Jew, has to reveal his or her Torah, and if you don't, then that Torah will never be revealed. Torah will never be revealed. There will be a piece of Torah that was not revealed. So it means to say, when we're begging Hashem, that's the neshama. But that getting to that, the reason I'm telling you all this, is getting to that point where I'm actualizing my soul, if you will, is called ma'asecha. I'm not Briyosecha, I'm Ma'asecha. I'm not just a Briya, I'm an Asiya. I'm not just a potential. That's good. You can be a potential for a while. 13 years old, 15 years old, 17. At some point, you got to start doing something. Become something, become somebody. Yeah.
You know, with anything in life, some people are always inclined to whatever turns them on, so to speak. So same thing, but in Torah, like, you always hear the phrase, Kol HaTorah Kula, right? So why is it that when people
Yeah, I think the way...
Well, when they speak negatively about one area versus another area...
Negatively?
Well, I mean, like it's not their favorite, or they...
I think there's two, you know, there's two ways to look at it. I mean, I think everybody has an obligation to know the whole Torah. So I don't think there's any... There's no heter not to know the whole Torah. Yeah. It's like, just to give a mashal, like, you know... Like a doctor, you know, you have a, you get this, there are specializations that medical practitioners engage in become more and more specialized. As the days go, I once took I was cutting a carrot, so I just like almost chopped off my finger. Looks pretty innocent now, but it looked pretty gross at the time. So I went to the doctor, and he says to me, I can give you stitches, but you have like 2 hours or something like that to get stitches. I'd rather you go to a hand specialist. So I said, I thought that was kind of weird, it's a hand specialist. So I went to, he sends me, because I was living in Australia at the time, he sends me to this hand specialist. The hand specialist says, I don't deal with knuckles. She tells me, I don't deal with knuckles because knuckles have, like he was explaining to me, that the muscles go right over the knuckle. So if you mess up on the, on those muscles and on those nerves, then forever, you can't manipulate your finger correctly. Let me send you to a knuckle expert. So I went, I'm walking down the hall of this hospital, Monash Hospital it was called, and I'm going to a knuckle expert. And I'm trying to think of, where is he going to send me? where can you go from here? So the answer is nowhere. That's the end of the road. Like, the knuckle expert can't get any more detailed than that. But the fact of the matter is that there's probably another couple of years there will be somebody who will divide the knuckle into 17 parts, and the skin and the muscles over the knuckles, etc. But none of these people can be credible doctors if they don't learn basic anatomy of the whole body. I mean, like, everybody has to know the whole Torah. Ashrei mi shebolim ha'am talmudo b'yado. And if you got to know the Kachim, you got to know Taurus, and you got to know Mishnah Berurah, and you got to know the Torah. That's why you have to know Tanakh. You're about to see Kachim Tar Tanakh. Like, everyone's going to know Tanakh. Chumash. Yeah. So that's pashut. That's pashut, and that has to be part of everybody's life. Whatever you end up doing, this year, next year, the year after, whatever you end up doing, you got to know the whole Torah. You have to know Torah. It's such a problem, by the way, that so many people don't know Torah, and they're gedolim. I mean, they're rabbanim. The people that are rabbanim, they just don't know Torah. I don't know. I'm a specialist, but you have to know the whole thing. Otherwise, you can't even understand what you're learning. Now, that being said, I believe that there are specialties in Torah. And this is where your neshama comes out in two ways. Neshama comes out in sort of guiding you to say, I'm particularly interested in Taurus. I have a Rebbe, or Moshe Shapiro, I don't know if you've heard of him, anybody else. It's just so interesting because he always speaks about, agadic sort of issues. He's probably the world's expert in Taharis. And he always says, Taharis means what's Tahara, what's Tamin? And all those Masechta, very complicated Masechta, Zav, and, very complicated Uksin. It's a complicated stuff. He says he just loves it. It's not because it helps him in his very famous lectures, or it's not that it's Lamaisa, or it's not, he just loves Taurus. Okay, so I mean, there's something there for everybody. Taurus is like, to me, something you gotta do. It's not something you wanna do. Like, who loves Taurus? He loves Taurus. He just likes it. It's like liking math. I don't know, I guess some people like math, hard to relate. some people like that kind of thing. Some people enjoy this type of stuff. So it depends. There's different neshamas. So that's first of all what the specialty is. But I don't think we're there yet. I think what I'm talking about is the two people look at a Gemara, and two people see something else completely. And that's what I'm talking about. Saying Chalkeinu B'Sarasecha means that with everything that I am and everything that I've experienced and everything that I learned in life, I look at this Gemara, I see it completely different. And I see, my best Torahs I ever heard were from people that never learned before in their life. When I used to, I was very osik with Bali Tshuva or non from people for many, many years, and I had a minhag when I was a rabbi in Buffalo. I had a minhag to, young, energetic. I used to just find out, a Jewish lawyer, Jewish doctor. I mean, you guys are young, you can still do this. It was gevaldik, like a Jewish businessman. I used to make an appointment, go see him, and I used to tell them on the phone look, you know, what do you want? I'm not going to ask you for money. Okay, come. That was always the, you know, they always figure, oh, what else are they going to ask for money? No, not going to ask you for money. I would ask them to learn with them for 15 minutes a week. I'll come to you. I'll come to your office. I just want to study with you 15 minutes a week. And, you know, that's what I did. I just you know, Reformed Jews. I looked for people in leadership positions like the, you know, the head of the Federation, presidents of the Reformed Temple, things like that. And I figured maybe I can have, like, an influence this way. By the end of the year, I was learning with 60 people a week. So 60, it was just running around from one person to the other. I'd say these are people, they were learning with me without yarmulkes on. They couldn't read Hebrew, most of them, you know. And I would learn with them. You know, when you ask somebody, just to give you, if you ever think of going into Kiruv, I'll give you a tip. Take it from me, I'm an old man in this, you know. You know, whenever you ask somebody, you know, okay, let's learn. First of all, the word is wrong. They don't know what the word means. Learn. Let's study. Let's, you know, let's go through some text together. Let's learn. I'm going to say, yeshivish word. Let's learn. We'll sit and learn. It's a funny thing to say, learn. But, you know, if you ask them, what would you like to study? They will all say the same thing, you know. I like to really understand. I really like to do the sitter. That's what they'll say, you know, because they feel if they ever do go to the temple or to synagogue, they feel inadequate. So they want to learn how to get an aliyah. They'll want to learn. So you can't ask them what they want to learn. They don't know what they want to learn. That's not the best thing for their neshama to learn how to learn the sitter, how to act in shul. You can spend 5 minutes on that, but what the learning has to be what you want to learn. And I found, for instance, like with most people, I would learn with them. Baba Kama Tzadik Zion, that was like the almond that I like to learn with people. That's the sugya of Mitzamtzim Meritzicha. Mitzamtzim is a sugya like if somebody's underwater swimming and you hold their head down so that they can't come up for air, did you kill him? Or did he kill himself? Or were you just Monea him from having a Yeshua? So that's what I used to learn with completely non-Jewish people. And it's amazing. They were, like, so fascinated with it. Now, first of all, like, it wasn't threatening to them, you know, and we were on even, you know, they're thinking about it, I'm thinking about it, interesting question. But what we're really talking about is, what is a life? What's the value of a life? What does it mean to take a life? There's so many underlying messages that we got here, but the point I wanted to make is that when learning with these people, when they would say a pshat, it was mamash from the neshama. I mean, what they would say with their legal expertise or with their whatever expertise they happen to have, the fact that they got married and divorced four times, you know, the fact that they were in jail, whatever their issues were, they saw the Gemara completely different than I saw the Gemara. And each person has his chiddush. So that's the same chokenu b'sar yosecha. So that's what we're looking to develop when we talk about, you know, the neshama. You know, so the Arizal was like, for instance, just to go back to Arizal, was like so sophisticated and so specialized in a particular aspect of Kabbalah. He wasn't the be-all and end-all of Kabbalah. You had the Zohar, you have the Rav Moshe Carnevaro, you had the Ramchal. I mean, there were other, like, it wasn't the, but he was, his specialty took, but it wasn't for Rav Yosef Karo. It wasn't for his neshama. That level of specialty wasn't, that level of chiddush, of creativity that the Arizal had wasn't for. So that's masech. So okay. So sorry, we're out of time. I just got through three words. But v'chein tein pachtecha. Let's at least have this kavanah that with the shem hamafirish of Hakadosh Baruch Hu, meaning with all the midos of Hashem, we're standing on Yom Kippur this week, and we're going to beg Hashem to let the world become Yirei Shemayim. And if they're close by masech, if they're already developed, let's stop daven for them. They're masech. They already developed themselves. Let's give them a pachad, because the pachad will push them into even a higher madrega. For the people that are so remote, you know, the people out there that are so remote that they really don't even have any kesher with it, so we say, emascha, give them at least the far away ema al komasha barasa. Even if it's just a plain bria, give them some ema. Give them some ema. And what will happen then, you see, because we say, is akol b'nei shemayim chutz miyur shemayim. So what are we davening for, people's Yerushalayim or not? We're davening for Pachad, we're davening for Ema. Once that happens, V'yira'ucha kol hamasim, then Yerushalayim will come about. V'yira'ucha kol hamasim, v'yishtacha v'lufanacha kol abruim. The bruim, meaning the people that are far away, who just have this sort of distant fear, well, you know, but yishtachu, they will humble themselves just a drop to the fact that there's a creator in this world. But ultimately, what it comes down to is a little bit of humbleness. You know, you talk to all of these people, and I've talked to thousands of them. The tough thing is to get them to realize that they are not the supernal power in this world. And all they have to do is, they can think they're really running corporations and they have 500 employees and or they're doctors and they're chayim v'amavis b'yodom and they're healing and they're this and that, until they find out that they have like one little cancerous malignant spot on their lung, and then all of a sudden they're powerless, or the colonoscopy doesn't come out good, we don't need that to be humbled, but the fact of the matter is a little bit of humbleness makes you think, Ribono Shel Olam. Let me tell you before I go, just have a quick story. Yom Kippur, a story for Yom Kippur that didn't happen on Yom Kippur, but it's a story. When I lived in Muncie, thinking about this all day today, I don't know why. When I lived in Muncie, Friday for a rabbi is a difficult day because he has drushes, and so usually, especially in the winter, it's a short thing, and you have to come up with all these profound things to say. So usually when people would call me, I would say to them, let's fuck Sunday, unless it's a real quick conversation. A fellow calls me, a stranger, and he says, this is how the conversation went, my name is Jerem, like Jerome, but Jerem, Haber, and I need to talk to you. So what would you assume? I assume he wants to find out if we're related, if we're the same family, Haber. So I said, okay, well, happy to talk to you. I never heard of this guy. I'm happy to talk to you. Maybe we'll talk on Sunday. No, today. Need to talk today. It's an emergency. Okay. Tells me how he got my name. Comes to talk to me on a Friday. So he says to me, this guy walks into my study that I had. Big, burly, healthy, good-looking guy, Jerem Haber. And he introduces himself to me, big strong handshake, like an athlete. And he says to me that, I said, what do you do? So he said, he's a professor at RCC, professor of philosophy, Rockland Community College. He's a professor at RCC, teaches philosophy. His specialty, everybody's got their specialty, is atheism. He said, he's written 4 books on atheism. He's written a book on why you should be ethical, the ethical atheist is a book, one of the titles that he wrote. Very sophisticated atheist, And he said he's really 100% atheist. No question about it. Okay, so what do you want from me on Friday? Atheist. Agav, he was describing to me how I lived in Muncie, I don't know if you know the area there, he lived in Spring Valley, next neighborhood over. So he said when he would drive around the Muncie, he would see the Hasidim hitchhiking, so he liked to pick them up. And they would always get into conversation. He'd say, what's your name? So he'd say, my name's Haber. So they would always say the Hasidim, oh, are you the Rabbi Haber from Oakville? He's not wearing a yarmulke, he's not wearing anything. They figured, okay, I'm some kind of a modern rabbi, right? So and he said, I have to confess, I would always say, yes, that's me. So that's why all the Hasidim like me. Anyways, he tells me that he's an atheist, and he says to me, but today I have a problem, a particular Friday, because he just came back from the doctor, and he found out that he has pancreatic cancer, and it's very advanced, and the doctor says he has 4 to 6 weeks to live. 4 to 6 weeks, that's a very bad diagnosis. Pancreatic cancer is very little to do about it. He's got 4 to 6 weeks to live. So he says to me that I have a problem because I am the proverbial, these were his words, atheist in a foxhole. Meaning, he explained to me that, when I got this diagnosis, and I have little kids at home, I have a wife, and all, he says, I really wanted to pray. He says, and I really want to daven. But I'm an atheist, so I can't pray because I don't believe in it. So how can I pray? And here I am, stuck. I am stuck. So It's very interesting because, you know, I think I really believe that Hashem gives you the right words at the right time for the right person. You know, it's like a special a nest that takes place. So I said to him, you know, when you say you're an atheist and you don't believe in God, do you mean like 100%, like 100% sure you don't believe in God? Like, you know, like, isn't there any possibility that there's a God? I mean, that you're wrong? I said, like, is there a little window, 1%, that there's a God? So he thinks, this is a very intelligent man. He thinks for a few minutes. And he says to me, that's about right, a 1 or 2% window of possibility. So I said to him, Jeremy, daven through that window. Daven through that window. Forget about the 98%. Just forget about it for a minute. And daven. It was such an interesting thing. He like started to cry, this athlete, you know. And he sat down with me, and we said tillim, we daven. It's very interesting. This guy came and he learned with me. He said he wanted to learn with me. You know, so I went with him, Rambam Hilchos Tshuva. Hilchos Tshuva Rambam. He didn't live for 4 weeks. He lived for about 7 months, 8 months. Or, and every week he came, he started coming with the Yarmulke, he started coming with Sitzes. He became, he started keeping Shabbos, started keeping kosher.
Jewish?
Yeah, he was Jewish also. Jewish. Haver. Anyways, he became from. Amish became from. Became a Baal Tshuva. We went through the whole Hilchos. At the end of his life, obviously he stopped teaching because he got so sick. He was getting sicker and sicker all the time, chemotherapy and all that. But he went back, because we learned this in Hilchos Tshuva, so it's a Yom Kippur story. He went back to RCC, to the university, and they invited him to give a guest lecture. He gave a lecture to the entire philosophy department, which was something like 200 people. I went in the auditorium. He gave a lecture on why he changed his mind and he thinks there's a God in this world. And he felt that that was his way of being Mekayem the Rambam, of doing tshuva. And he wrote it as a paper. It was the last thing he did, was he wrote it as a paper. Really good. So the pshat is that the tshuva on Yom Kippur is not about like 100%. Nobody's got 100%. Okay, he had 2%. Maybe we got 65%, 85%. I don't know. You know, like everybody's. But tshuva is to find the place which is good, and to daven through that window. That's what it's all about. I'll tell you a postscript of a story that on usually every January I go to the United States, so I speak at a certain convention. So that there on Route 17 in New Jersey is Joseph Banks. So I buy all my suits. I think Joseph Banks. I buy all my suits at Joseph Banks in January because that's when they have their half price sales. Right after that. That story with this guy, I went in there to buy a suit, and the salesman, he says to me, I give him my credit card, and he says to me, Haber, he says, I had a professor, Haber at RCC. So I said, oh really, yeah, Jerome Haber? So he says, yeah, that was my teacher. So he said, he was great, because he's the one who gave us permission not to believe in anything. he's the one who told us that it's not necessary to believe, and you can be ethical, and you can be a good person. It really made him feel much better, made a big difference in his life. You know? So I said to him, "Look, you know, I have some bad news for you." So I have bad news for you because he changed his mind. And he died. I told him the story. I just told you. I said he changed his mind, and he wrote a paper. And this guy turned white. He said he changed his mind. Nobody could change his mind. He was like a. So I said, well, nobody can change his mind. How about pancreatic cancer for changing your mind? You know, something changed his mind. So I said, and he wrote it in a paper. So the suit salesman says to me, get me that paper. Okay. I bought the suit. Came to Israel. You know, because I left Israel right after. Came to Israel, and forgot about the whole thing. I come in a year later in January. I walk into the store. I'm telling you, I'm not two steps into the store. You never sent me the paper. He says, and I've been looking, I looked online, I looked on the, I called RCC, I can't find the paper. So I need to get the paper. So I said, well, I'm traveling, I don't know where, anyways, I got him the paper, and I don't know if he's Jewish or from, I don't know anything about this guy. Just like it's like an interesting thing, like the effect, the domino effect that she has. But the point I wanted to make is that Tein Pachtecha Akol Maasecha, that this is the tefillah. The tefillah is Tein Pachtecha Akol Maasecha Ve'Mosta Akol Maase Barasa. Whether they're near, whether they're far, got to find a way to make that dent. Hashem should give them the dent, and it should be with health and with gesund, and it should only be with positive things for all of us and all of Israel. But Baruch Hashem Tov.